Hi everyone! Thank you for joining us for another episode of Lit Radio Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Teja. Today, we are once again joined by the authors of Running on Empty, Amy Bradley and Katrin Seymour. In their second episode with us on Lit Radio, they will discuss what individuals and companies can do to help tackle burnout at work. Amy and Katrin's book, Running on Empty, Navigating the Dangers of Burnout at Work, gives the reader a sense of when burnout is happening or imminent and suggests human and radical inroads for prevention and healing. Thank you very much, Katrin and Amy, for joining us today again to discuss your new book, Running on Empty, Navigating the Dangers of Burnout at Work. So during our first episode, we discussed what burnout is and why it is so prevalent. And today we're going to talk about what individuals and organizations can do about burnout, which is very important, of course. So my very first question to you today is, one of the main goals of your book is to challenge the notions of recovery from burnout. So what notions need to be challenged and why? Amy, we can start with you.
Yeah, this is something that was really important to both of us to state our position on burnout as the book not being one that offers short cuts or tips or solutions to help people recover, because what we came to understand in our work alongside particularly those who were looking back on a significant experience of burnout, they said to us, there's no such thing as recovery. For them, they were learning to live with greater insight into the signs of when they might be on the edge of burnout, having been through it, but knowing that the danger of burnout was always present for them. So they actually challenged whether recovery from burnout was ever, in fact, possible. Instead, these people were learning to live with the chance of burnout, with more self-awareness, but knowing that they always had to constantly negotiate its boundaries. So we talk in the book about the Goldilocks point, where people who had been through burnout were trying to negotiate and find a place where work's hold over them wasn't too much so that it would pull them back into burnout, nor would their relationship with work be one that is so slack that the meaning that work brought them and the much needed sense of purpose, direction, progress that people find from their work was still there. So this Goldilocks point is a really important one. And as I said at the start, we realized how naive actually it would be to try and write a book with neatly packaged solutions, knowing from our research that there isn't a silver bullet. And one thing we do say in the book is that we won't solve the burnout problem alone. We need to find ways of radically reimagining organizations and to become more aware of ourselves as individuals and actually move towards eradicating burnout together collectively.
Mm. Yeah, I think what you just said, that there isn't a silver bullet, is very important, and we all need to take some small steps. But then for the book, you interviewed many people from all around the world to share their experiences with burnout. So would you each share with us the most surprising thing you heard throughout your sessions? Katrin, let's start with you on this one.
Sure, Teja. To me, there are two things that I would highlight there. One is in terms of what we found around the content of what people were saying, you know, what were their experiences? And the second one emerged a little bit more from the process. So the first one, I found surprising the degree to which all of these people who were either, you know, had experienced a significant burnout or felt that they were teetering on the edge, that sort of propensity that we seem to have as human beings to power through, to power through, you know, an increasing level of difficulty, of volume of work, of pressure, of, you know, all of that combined beyond where we are properly functioning as human beings. So I think that that was surprising to me in terms of realizing that this is kind of it's a tendency that we have. It's a tendency that I think organizations today are still learning to back away from. You know, how hard can we push people? Because they will try to power through. So that that inability to be reflexive or to see yourself in those moments of, okay, I'm giving too much. And what that resulted in, so the symptoms that we started seeing were so pervasive, were the loss of sleep. I think that's the first and most pervasive and alarming one, that, you know, my own experience of waking up at 3 or 4 in the morning every day thinking about work, and then that same experience coming from many others of the people that we interviewed. So there's the loss of sleep, and then the amnesia that Amy talked a little bit about in the last episode, that loss of memory, which can be absolute and quite shocking to the individual, to suddenly, you know, forget where you live, or forget forget like really key pieces of information for functioning properly. So that in a nutshell is the first surprising thing. The second one has to do with what we found was healing and a practice that was very restorative in the research that we did. So in that community inquiry and in some of our interviews with others, which was the strength of connection that we found was possible even across distances. So remember, we were doing this research during the pandemic, and that ability to connect across distance, the ability to talk to each other and to find some sense of, you know, not recovery, as Amy said, but certainly restoration and sustenance in that human connection was remarkable. Amy and I think, found that in each other. You know, doing this work together was very restorative work in a way. And our research participants, our co-researchers, as we call them, found that as well. That collaborating across that distance, that establishing the connection and talking about how they were feeling and how they were experiencing overwhelm or how they had experienced burnout was very powerful.
That's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that, Catherine. And what about you, Amy? What surprised you the most?
Yeah, just building on what Catherine said, the power of conversation between strangers. Because as Catherine said, we part of the research design was bringing people together in a community. And these people didn't know each other. They didn't know anything about their roles, the organizations they worked for. They were just human beings meeting together on Zoom. And we would convene for 90 minutes every few weeks over an extended period. And what was amazing was that simply being able to meet as human beings, to share their stories, to make sense of their experiences together and realize they were not alone, was so powerful. And in fact, people told us that it was liberating, where because they were strangers, there was no expectations about roles to play or, you know, expectations of ways of being with each other. And they were actually more willing to disclose because they were strangers. So that healing power of conversation in community was not something we expected at all. And in fact, it's led us to developing what we're calling Running on Empty Rounds, which is an initiative to bring people together from all over the world in small groups of 6 to 8 people who have a shared experience of overwhelm and burnout and would like to to find connection and healing in community. So this was really surprising and not an outcome we expected, but it's led us to offer the running on empty rounds so that we can continue to offer this practice to others.
Mm, absolutely. Thank you for sharing as well. In your interviews, you spoke with a lot of people, as we said, from all around the world, people who are struggling with burnout in the past, who are on the verge of it, or who are actually struggling at that specific moment. But you also talked with people whose family members or friends are struggling with it. So what can people do to help someone close to them who is experiencing burnout? Catherine, let's go with you on this one.
So, as with other mental health challenges, the first step is recognizing and admitting to yourself and to others that we're not okay, right? So I think that's one of the hardest things for people who experience burnout or overwhelm are generally very capable people, very driven people, people who are used to accomplishing a lot. So having the vulnerability and the authenticity to admit that you're not doing so great is one of the first challenges, that the pressures are really too much and that they're growing. So in light of that, what we would recommend if you have someone close to you or family member or friend who seems to be succumbing to those pressures, is to ask questions, kindly but firmly. Ask people, can they see that they are under too much pressure? Can they articulate that? Where can they relieve pressure? Where is it possible to clear the decks and to create enough space so that you can at least have that moment of self-awareness of recognizing that that you might need to take a step back, that you might even need help in doing that. Because, if the first step is recognition, then the second step would be articulating that and communicating that to the people, at work and at home who might be able to help. So what is critical and what can wait on those busy, busy schedules, on those days that are endless and nights that might be sleepless? What can we clear off that plate? How could people prioritize their own health over and before the interests and demands of others? How can they somehow get around to realizing, back to the oxygen mask metaphor, how can they get that oxygen mask on themselves before they're able to meet all those expectations and responsibilities that they might be feeling?
Mm. That's very helpful, I'm sure, for many people who are listening on this moment. So thank you. But then you also in your book say that companies, they play a huge role. They should be playing a huge role in helping employees who are struggling. So Amy, what is that role of companies in helping employees who are on the verge of burnout or even struggling with it?
Yeah, thanks, Tia. Just building on what Catherine's just been saying, we advocate in the book that this is about, as Catherine's been saying, it's about families and friends and communities, as well as individuals and organizations. We all need to play our part to move us beyond this kind of preoccupation with self-interest towards collective action. And when it comes to companies and organizations, they now ignore burnout at their peril, because we know global engagement levels are at 20%. That means 8 in 10 people are getting up in the morning and for whatever reason they have a problematic relationship with their work. These figures are pretty stark, that there's something wrong when it comes to our relationship with our work. And we know from levels of resignations, mental health and statistics around burnout. We talked about 50% of the population being overextended at work in the first episode, people are on track to something that isn't healthy. So organizations need to look at this. It's so widespread now. And there are moves that are being made by organizations around well-being initiatives. You know, we see offers of counseling support. You know, there's things like meditation classes, fitness programs. And we are reading weekly organizations who are trying to make moves in this regard. So Nike, an example, last summer, they announced that they would close their offices worldwide to give staff an additional week's break. But they framed that as giving employees time to recover and rest. So on the one hand, these moves acknowledge burnout's real, but on the other hand, they are sticky plasters, essentially. You know, we do say in the book that when organizations, if they're looking to tackle burnout at its roots, we need to radically reimagine our relationship with work. And as part of our research in the community inquiry aspect to the research that we undertook, we asked people, okay, imagine a world without burnout. What would need to be in place for you to feel you have a healthy relationship with work? And some of the things they said were actually low-hanging fruit for organizations. So they said, I would like to be fairly compensated for the work that I do. They mm-hmm. said, we need processes organizationally that don't depersonalize. Now, in many ways, that they are, these are achievable. They're not about radical reinvention. Other things they said were more radical. So they said things like, I want to work somewhere where compassion for myself and others is prioritized, even at the expense of productivity, even at the expense of being the fastest, most efficient, most results driven organization. They said, I want to work somewhere where the workplace acknowledges that my purpose is going to come from outside of work, not just work, and that patterns of overworked within the organization are called out. And if people start ignoring their own self-care in favor of immediate client demands, these things are called out. So there was a whole conversation, wasn't there, Catherine, about listening systems, the organizations being fluidly listening to how people are and constantly readjusting if people are speaking up about feeling anxious, about feeling stressed or exhausted. Mm-hmm. So they talked about more equal power between the employee and the employer, reciprocity, where people feel that what they're giving to the organization is matched in return. And actually, what we know about reciprocity in the research that's been done is that in organizations that are built around, designed around reciprocity, such as hiring for relational skills, using participatory selection processes, focusing on group reward and incentive as opposed to individual reward and incentive, this reciprocity becomes a virtuous and generative process that enhances cohesion, belonging, commitment, trust. So there's all sorts of performance outcomes that come from this kind of equal power and two-way relationship. And by the way, and I'll stop talking now and pass over to Catherine, but just to say that this isn't so radical. We were actually able to find examples of organizations that we feature in the book, one called Noble Collective in particular, that is doing this right now, a consciously compassionate organization. Catherine, I didn't know if you wanted to add anything, but.
Thanks, Amy. So absolutely agree with all of that. And, you know, in particular, that move towards what we're calling a radical reimagination or reinvention of the way that organizations address personal sustainability is, you know, it seems So on the one hand, it is radical. On the other hand, it's not that far off, as Amy just highlighted. It does represent, I think this is important to reflect on, it is a brave move, right? So those organizations that we've seen that are able to focus on that reciprocity, on truly taking an attitude of care and collective care of us as an organization, of the community as a whole. It's sort of a brave and a vulnerable move, right? It opens the door to conversations that, when there is a very top-down power dynamic, I set the pace of work and you do the work. You know, there's a comfort there in probably from both sides, but especially from the organizational power perspective, to be able to, you know, call the shots, set the pace. And then if some people don't measure up, then something gets done about that. In that reciprocal relationship, there's an openness to, you know, what will we learn together? How will we build this, you know, sense of responsibility and this communication together so that we're all responsible together for each other's well-being? I do think there's a moment there, if I were to imagine an organization switching from the more traditional view to the more reciprocal view, there is a moment of vulnerability there for the organization, which I think is a really lovely opportunity and probably a little bit scary too. But just as we ask leaders to be vulnerable and to be open and to be authentic in their leadership, you know, taking that one step further and asking the whole organization to do that, for the you know, the machine or the system that creates these groups of people that are organized into, you know, companies and other organizations, to take on that vulnerability and that openness to what needs to happen on a human level is pretty radical, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, I think those are very interesting insights you shared. And of course, business leaders can read even more in your book. But then my final question for you is, so many people right now are probably feeling overwhelmed with their work responsibilities and might be at risk of burnout. So could you share with us some prevention strategies that can help to avoid burnout when you feel so close to it? Amy, we can go with you first.
Yeah, I would say notice what's happening to you. Catherine said this earlier, and I don't think we can emphasize it enough. Just take a moment to notice, because that moment for noticing is the first step towards making shifts. And I would say, secondly, small shifts, you know, small steps to bring your life into greater balance. And this is different. We've found these small shifts, these ways of stepping back from the edge are different for each person. And both Catherine and I, as a direct result of the research and writing the book, have both made adjustments to our work lives. You know, I decided to step away from full-time employment and to achieve balance in that way. And we're spending more and more time in a part of rural France that is just wonderfully healing. It's a nestled in nature with, you know, the mountains and rivers around us, and that connection to nature for me has been the shift. It's just been so healing for me. You know, the green and blue spaces of the forests and water, and I suppose by the third thing I would say before handing over to Catherine is by noticing and starting to make more shifts to create balance in our lives where work isn't so central, and we, you know, we're nourished by our relationships, by the aspects of our lives that we've found nourish our souls, such as being in nature or moving our bodies through exercise, you know, by becoming more aware of ourselves and what it feels like to be whole, if we start to engage in these practices, you know, imagine the shift that would happen if we were able to do that individually to collectively. I can only say that my hope is that this enables us to all become more conscious, more connected, less seduced by growth, success, the material outcomes of work, and more nurturing of ourselves and of the planet.
Absolutely. And what about you, Katrin? What prevention strategies you would like to share?
Yeah, first of all, I'm smiling listening to you, Amy, talking about nature and the green and blue spaces of the forest. So that was definitely one of the 3 points I was going to mention, right? Nature as a great healer. And I think that is well explained in the book. And as Amy just mentioned, you know, on a personal level, we've gotten a lot out of that too. I think the one thing I might add there is that, you know, in that connection to nature, what we found is that letting our senses feel the connection to the world, so feel the vastness of the world around us, and creating some distance from some of the problems and the minutiae and the, you know, sort of minute to minute, hour to hour nature of many of our to-do lists is part of that, right? So the move behind that connection to nature is just to feel the greater importance of maybe, you know, being part of the planet, being part of the world, which is so much bigger than we are. Listening to your body, so connecting with your inner self, whether that's through movement, meditation, yoga, just having that sense of, you know, your body will tell you, whether it's because you're not getting enough sleep, because you're not eating the right foods, because you're just terribly anxious, you can locate those feelings in your body that are giving you those signs, right? So gaining some perspective, stepping, you know, almost like stepping out of your head a little bit and listening to those physical signs. And then the third one is the reaching out to others. So one of the symptoms of burnout and overwhelm is that people tend to isolate themselves. Again, these are usually quite accomplished and accomplishing people, and they don't necessarily want to admit to others that they're struggling. So there's an isolation. So if you are feeling overwhelmed or like you're burning out, try to recognize your tendency to isolate yourself and reach out to others, ask questions, you know, get in contact with others who might be able to help you see and process what you're experiencing.
Mm. Thank you very much, Katrin and Amy, for giving your tips and prevention strategies. I believe they would be very useful for anyone listening to this podcast today. And of course, people can read even more in your book, Running on Empty. So thanks again for taking the time to speak with me today and during our previous episodes. It was a great experience speaking to you.
Thank you so much, Taya. It was our pleasure.
Thanks, Taya.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and at Lit Business Media on LinkedIn for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.